You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to Soupcast, coming to you from ArchaeoSoup Towers. By popular demand, we're taking selected videos from the ArchaeoSoup back catalogue and bringing them to you as convenient podcasts. As the name implies, with ArchaeoSoup, you get a bit of everything thrown into the pot. Archaeology, discussion, humour and debate. You can find out more at archaeosoup.com. So sit back, relax and enjoy a hearty helping of ArchaeoSoup.
I don't know what's going to happen. I am simply at a loss. I mean, you know, I could be gone by January.
Hello, and welcome back to the Watching Brief for the week of the 16th of August, 2021. I am joined, as ever, by my constant companion and colleague, Mr. Andy Brockman. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Mark. You're making us sound like one of those Edwardian couples from some improving novel that you...
I'm happy to go promenading with you, dear. Do you want to head out?
well, actually, to be fair, there are some very, very nice promenades in the northeast, aren't there? I remember Saltburn in particular visiting.
Saltburn. There are a few really nice deans in the area, and actually, but where I used to live in York, there's a whole riverbank dedicated to promenading. It was like a whole, it was sort of, you know, gated off. You'd have to pay a shilling back in the day to take your constant companion with you, and it was the perfect place to go for a stroll.
Pretentious, moi.
Anyway, promenading to one side, our watching brief continues, does it not? Our ongoing mission to examine the archaeological news of the day and present it here for you guys at home to discuss and debate below. And this week's archaeological news is dominated by a single story, and that is the closure, the loss of an archaeological undergraduate course in the immediate effect at Worcester University. It's a real shame. It's actually, in that sense, the reason why we went for a bit of a pun in this video's title, not just because it was low-hanging wordplay fruit, but actually because it really genuinely represents a loss of character and flavour in the archaeological landscape. These sorts of departments aren't part of the large Russell Group block, as it were, or the Cambridge block, where a certain type of archaeologist tends to be produced. They add character, they add flavour, they add local interests, they add specialisms which serve also often their local communities, and in that sense it is genuinely the loss of something a little bit interesting on the archaeological landscape. So earlier today you filmed an interview, did you not, with some folks down at Worcester, and what are we about to see, Andy?
We're about to see, as you say, a conversation I recorded earlier on today. It is with Dr. Jodie Lewis, who is the current head of course at the University of Worcester, and Jack Rowe, who is a PhD candidate at the University of Worcester. In fact, he's just done his upgrade from his master's. I think the interview speaks for itself, and I don't need to say anything more by way of introduction. Here's our conversation. Dr. Jodie Lewis, you're currently the head of course at the University of Worcester, teaching archaeology and various other masters and so on. Can you explain to us, explain to our audience briefly, how does the department come to be under basically threat of closure this week?
Yes, right. Well, there's a little bit of background to this, as some people might have picked up already. Our archaeology and heritage undergraduate degree was suspended to recruitment in June 2020. Staff were not consulted about this. We were told that the university were not confident that we'd get sufficient numbers for September 2020, and so they were going to suspend recruitment, which was a bit of a shock. Obviously, we were deep in COVID at the time. We were producing materials for, virtual materials for open days and so on. And then it transpired that the course was going to be suspended also for the current academic year, 2021-22, and then we found it was going to be suspended for 22-23. So this leaves us in a situation where we currently will only have third years. The university thought that they didn't have a lot of confidence in archaeology, so they commissioned something called a course viability report to investigate, this is an external report, to investigate the national picture, you know, applications, admissions, regional trends, and so on. And so it was after they did this that they decided that things weren't looking good for archaeology, but perhaps what we needed to do was to reinvigorate our offering and come up with some new course proposals which could potentially attract more students. Obviously...
Can I just interrupt there for a second? I think it's important to establish as well for our audience that the University of Worcester, it's been teaching archaeology for just around 20 years now, and it's particularly good at attracting students from the immediate area in the West Midlands. It's not a Russell Group university, it's what's called one of the new wave universities, but it prides itself on its links to the community.
Absolutely, yes. Many of our students, probably around half at least, it does vary year by year, come from the West Midlands region. And we also have significant numbers of mature students. Most of our students come from state schools. We have significant numbers from sort of low participation backgrounds, significant numbers with disabilities, and so forth. So we attract students who, some of those students wouldn't go anywhere else. They need to stay local within the West Midlands region for various reasons. So, and we've always, you know, we've been very good at that. That you know, we know the kind of students who generally come to Worcester. Obviously, there was the you know, much known demographic dip, and you know, the drop in our numbers probably pretty much corresponds with the decline in 18-year-olds that were around, which started to hit in about 2018. Develop new courses, and then these courses were rejected because there was still no confidence by the university in the market for archaeology, the degree market, but to develop some other things. So, you know, we were told to think about another degree, maybe a single honours degree in archaeology and history. In the old days that would have been a joint honours, but a sort of named award, and also masters and apprenticeships. So that's what we've been doing this year, as well as teaching and all our other duties. We've been working hard on my colleagues, myself, on developing, you know, new proposals.
And in fact, again, I think it's important to establish your proposals are at the stage you were meant to be presenting them to the university formally next month, in a few weeks' time, weren't you?
Yes, the proposals for the masters and the apprenticeship schemes were meant to be going to for consideration by the university in September. We also had a team meeting with our head of school, some of us, in July, where I said, you know, we really feel that for a successful master's program in particular, you need a feed of your own students coming through. So we would like the opportunity to develop, you know, we want to develop an undergraduate degree. We've got lots of ideas. We know the market is there, you know. So, you know, that was met with some, you know, okay, yeah, you could do that too. It was appreciated that meeting a September deadline for a new undergraduate degree, as well as the masters and apprenticeships, was probably not feasible. So we were told, you know, obviously it's summer, and staff generally take leave, and so to get on with that proposal for a new undergraduate course as well as soon as possible from September onwards, certainly, you know, look to getting it you know, prepared and submitted for September, October. So there, October, November even. So there were plans. You know, we had plans for both the postgraduate provision and also our new ideas for an undergraduate degree. And then we were called into a meeting this week, which we thought was a team meeting to provide some general updates. And that's where we were told it was an information sharing meeting to review staffing in archaeology. And in that meeting, we were told that the university had decided that they didn't want us to present any proposals for new courses, that essentially archaeology as a subject was being closed, shut down by the university, that we would teach out our final year students, and by July, next July, we would need no archaeology staffing. But not just that, we wouldn't need all our staffing for semester two. So yes, this was interesting. So not only were we being told that archaeology was closing and we wouldn't need any archaeology staff next July, we were also told we don't need all the staff we have already, all 3.5 of us, for semester two. And so for semester two, the university want to, so that's from January 2022, they want to reduce staffing from our current level of 3.5 down to 1.5. And how that's going to happen has not yet been decided. So the meeting that we had on Tuesday is apparently the sort of the start of the formal consultation process.
Jack Rowe, you're a postgraduate student at the moment. Obviously, one of the key things with a postgrad is the staff you work with and the areas of expertise that you can draw on for your particular subject area, and that would be this proposal would have a significant impact on all students, but particularly I would imagine on postgrads. When did you first hear that this was in the offing?
I actually heard nothing from the university. My first knowledge of this came, must have been hours after the meeting on Tuesday afternoon, from my supervisor, Jodie Lewis, in private messages, and then saw sort of the dissipating ripples onto social media after that. I contacted the head of the school, Professor Peter Seville, yesterday afternoon. I sent him an email, which I have put on my Facebook and my Twitter, to best it sort of illustrates to other people the issues that I'm facing, and was met with a reply. But my reply to his reply was that that I'd heard it through social media. That was what he said. He was can't remember his exact words, but he was deeply he didn't say sorry, this was the thing. He said it was deeply unfortunate that I heard through social media when I actually heard from Jodie. I find it deeply concerning that not only has he not gotten in touch with me beforehand, but that it took me to prompt him to get a response from him.
And can I just again, just for clarification, were and Jodie Lewis, if you want to pitch in here as well, to your knowledge, were any students consulted as part of the debate within the university about what to do with archaeology at Worcester?
To the best of my knowledge, no, and certainly not myself.
No, our current undergraduates have, I don't know if they've been told yet, but certainly to my knowledge, our current undergraduates have not been told or consulted about the course closure.
And We've talked as well about the importance of the university, of its community links, and you've mentioned its work with people with disabilities. It prides itself on having sports facilities for disability sports, for example, and obviously that's in news at the moment with the Paralympics about to start. Again, to your knowledge, when the university took this decision, did they make any allowance or make undertake any risk assessments, for example, for the impact on hard to reach cohorts of potential students or on protected characteristics under the Human Rights Act?
To my knowledge, no.
Is that your perception as well, Jack?
Yes, I'm as much in the dark as Jodie on this front.
I think it's worth saying here at this point as well that the report that they commissioned from a commercial consultancy, which I've seen a copy of, actually even goes so far as saying in one aspect, in joint honours degrees, that Worcester actually does better than some universities in recruiting to that particular kind of course, which just again, there seems to be a disconnect between what they were being told by their own consultants and what they've now done.
Yes, funny that. I think the other thing worth noting here, at the moment, our third year is small. I concede, our third year is small. But that is anomalous. You know, this is the result of the decline in 18-year-olds. It's also hit by the removal of the A level in archaeology, which was taught locally in Worcestershire. Generally, you know, archaeology at Worcester has been around for around 20 years, as you say, and generally we recruit sort of 20 to 25 students a year. Some years we've had bumper years where we've had 30. So there was a dip that started in 2018-19, matched by the demographic dip, obviously. But, you know, we're coming out of that. You know, it's, you know, within the next few years, and we've looked at, you know, the population estimates nationally and for the West Midlands, the number of 18-year-olds is growing. And I'm really confident we would have been back up there with our 20 to 25 students a year. Now, obviously, in the scheme of things, to a university, not just Worcester, to many universities, 20 to 25 students a year is small beer, isn't it? You know, it's not the sort of 50 students, 100 students crammed into a lecture theatre. But these are healthy numbers for archaeology. You know, those kind of getting 20, 25 students a year, that's good. You know, that's good. If you look at the numbers nationally, we've got some big departments which have, you know, tend to get the bigger numbers. But for the rest of us, slightly smaller institutions, you know, 20 to 25 students, that's more than a good few of the Russell groups are getting as well. So I'm confident that we could have got back there. And I think it should also be remembered here that until 2019, archaeology at Worcester has been supported by only two permanent full-time members of staff. All of the other staffing was hourly paid. And it was only in 2019 that many of these, and some of these hourly paid staff that we've had, have been working for the university for around 10 years. It was only in 2019 that these contracts were turned from hourly paid to fractional permanent positions. So it was only in 2019, it was only because some of the staff were on maternity leave, one staff chose not to take the offer for various reasons. It was only in January 2020 that we had a full cohort of staff. So it was only in January 2020 that we were able to say, brilliant, this is it. You know, because you can't expect hourly staff to be, you know, developing marketing strategies and getting students when they're being paid on an hourly, but they won't be paid for it. And the two permanent members of staff had quite a lot on. They're at their maximum workload. So January 2020, we were so excited because we had a full complement of staff, permanent staff, for the first time ever, and felt, right, this is it. There's so much we can do now, you know, in terms of outreach and developing projects and working with the local communities. We are resourced. And then, of course, we were hit by COVID. which was a problem. And then, you know, so full complement of staffing January 2020, COVID hits March 2020, June 2020, we're told the course is being suspended. So we don't even have the chance to utilise our staffing to attract students because they've told us the course is suspended.
Can I make one other quick point on this? The university has issued a statement to the media. We'll link to it below in our YouTube feed so that people can read the entirety of it. But one clause in particular, it says that the university has made strenuous efforts to attract students and market the course. Is that your perception?
No. Members of staff in our department, and this isn't unique to our department, anecdotally, many members of academic staff across the university have drawn attention to the lack of central support for promoting degrees. There isn't a budget. As far as I'm aware, there's no budget for marketing. It all comes out of individual departments, you know, sort of, and schools allocation. We have no central support, so academic staff are left to develop their own marketing strategy, which we're all happy to chip in, you know, and get out there and talk to people. And you know, we do all our work through, you know, through open days and applicant days and talking to local groups and societies. You know, we do some school outreach within the limited resources we had. We were doing school outreach, but no, we aren't marketing specialists. You know, we need help, and we have asked for help, and we haven't received any help. So, is there a strenuous marketing strategy? Not one that I'm aware of. No.
Jack, you're a postgrad and you're coming to the end of your course now. Where does this situation, for want of a better word, leave you and the way you're going to complete your degree?
I really don't know. It was only a week before the Tuesday on the 10th of this month that I passed my master's to PhD transfer, which was, you know, a highlight of the previous 5 years. It was final confirmation that the work I'd done over those 5 years, including, you know, the tiny bits I try and do on the year I had to take out for unfortunate reasons, was not for nothing. And it was confirmation I'm on the right track and I can carry on and finish this big project I've devoted my life to over the last 5 years and would hope to continue for the following 2 years. With the announcement of the closure of the university, of our archaeology department in 12 months, that leaves me with a year where I'm in the wilderness and I don't know what the future is for my PhD. I'll have come this far, and as you sort of mentioned and sort of referenced my letter earlier, hardships that I've had to undergo, which, you know, I'm not saying that mine particularly special or hard, and because every PhD student will have to go through and face adversities, but to think that it was all I'd be 1 year off finishing and all of this hard work and potentially for nothing, I've found it really deeply unsettling. I can normally get to sleep in 10 minutes. I'm a really good sleeper, but I was tossing and turning for about 2 hours last night going over situations in my head, and I've been flipping from pillar to post in my own mind as to what will I do, what won't I do, is that an option, maybe not, that's an option, maybe this is an option, and I'm just in the wilderness at the moment, which is coming back to, you know, my lack of contact from the university. So at the moment I just don't know where I'm left. I feel neglected. I feel, you know, the university do have a duty of care to the students, of course. I think every university would have that in the code of conduct. But I feel so just completely let down and, yeah, just lost. I've got another 12 months potentially to carry on and do what I can in the next year out of the two that I'm supposed to have left. But to get so close towards the end and then sort of be thrown under the bus, so to say, it's provoking all sorts of reactions in me.
And Jodie Lewis, I presume, obviously we're seeing very clearly there the human cost of decisions like this. Now, obviously, universities can't make a decision based on the reaction of one individual or even a group of individuals, much as we wish they could perhaps sometimes. But obviously, you and your colleagues, and I would imagine the University College Union, your trades union, are now across this and will be attempting to at least mitigate the kind of situation that Jack's just described. How do you see things? How do you hope things might proceed in the next few weeks and months?
Well, first of all, if we just stick with Jack's situation, I know that Jack has had, he's told me he's had some contact from the head of school, who has apparently made some kind of reassurance that he is being considered and wants to talk to Jack further about that. As Jack's supervisor, it would be helpful if I knew what they had planned for Jack. I feel like I'm as much in the dark about what they have planned for Jack as Jack is, actually, which is interesting. I don't know what's going to happen. I am simply at a loss. I mean, you know, I could be gone by January. Mm. There's no guarantee that I will even have this year. You know, this is the consultation process. They have to, what we do know is that staff have to be, our current staffing base has to be reduced from 3.5 to 1.5 for archaeology, for teaching archaeology, in January. So it might be that some colleagues want to go in January. It might be that none of us want to go. It might be the university decides who's going. We're in that consultation period at the moment. So I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen to Jack. I have no idea what's going to happen to our undergraduates, if our poor undergraduates who are, you know, going to be affected by this. Of course they're going to be affected, because over half the staffing will be gone in January. So what about those students who, you know, have their dissertations, their dissertation supervisor may well disappear. There's just so much uncertainty. You know, we know nothing really about how this is going to unfold and what the repercussions are going to be. And the impact on all our mental health is excruciating, as you can imagine. I mean, I personally actually on leave at the moment, and I was asked if it would be possible to attend this meeting, and I'd get a day of leave with this update meeting that happened on Tuesday, and I'd get a day of leave to compensate for giving up a day of leave. But you know, so I'm on leave and was hoping to sort of take a breather and regroup, that we all need at points, before what I thought would be going back in with new course proposals come September. And now the rest of my leave, of course, is just consumed with worry and doubt and fear and anger for all of us, for all of my colleagues and for all my students. So, it's not good. It's not good.
And I don't think I really want to follow that. So, Jack Rowe, Dr. Jodie Lewis, thank you very much for joining us on Watching Brief.
Thank you very much.
It's a real shame, and it looks as though people have been left not quite knowing what's going to come next. Just as with Sheffield, there are questions to be answered in terms of the care, the duty of care in that sense for students at the university, for their ongoing the courses that they're on that they're yet to finish. And I don't know about you, Andy, but I mean, aside from the effect of hearing people who have just had this happen to them, I'm a touch concerned here about precedent, in so much as if a university can simply start saying, oh, well, there's no market for archaeology, the market is shrinking, then the next university only has to point to Worcester's report. The report that was commissioned apparently by an independent body in order to justify it. The actual reasoning behind that statement doesn't have to be examined. It's risky. I think I described this to you a couple of days ago as feeling not so much like dominoes as people were talking about with regards to Sheffield, but rather actually more like a landslide, or perhaps one of those alpine snow clearances where there's a sudden bang or something moves quickly. There's a slight shift in the landscape and then suddenly it all falls. If we're not careful, archaeology could be in trouble here.
I think there are very few people in the sector at the moment who disagree with that analysis. I can't think of a time in the more than 30 years that I've been engaged with archaeology training and as a professional, when archaeologists felt it so much threat. Mm. And the sector, talking to people in the sector, talking to friends, talking to colleagues, people feel so, I think afraid is not too strong a word, afraid for what the future might be bringing. Mm. We've talked in the past on Watching Brief about the issues around the government's agenda on woke and the potential changes to planning and so on, which all feeds into the mental mindscape that archaeologists are now living with daily. But in a sense, those are almost those are things that are yet to happen or are distant and aren't tangible. This is about, and as we saw, I think the rawness of parts of that interview, this is people's lives that are being deeply affected here. And you know, below the line we'll publish the statement from the university. But I think there'll be people watching this who think that the University of Worcester owes these people a duty of care, and it hasn't discharged it.
Obviously, there's more, I think, more detail surrounding some of those issues in the article that you've written as well. We'll link to that below. I suppose there's one more thing that's probably worthwhile saying is, don't be gentlemanly about this or gentlewomanly about this. There are almost certainly similar conversations happening at other departments across the country, and the notion that if you keep quiet, things might not change, or that you might, for example, get to keep your position as it is, unmodified. And I'm not being alarmist and saying that people's jobs are just at risk across the board, but ultimately, the sector can't be there for you if they don't know what's happening. And so if there are conversations like this occurring, please do reach out either to us or to other people and start the ball rolling on a response, because in this instance and in others it feels a little bit like management slightly get ahead of themselves in terms of asserting what the value of archaeology is in this instance, for example, and maybe they need to be given a bit more food for thought as to what it is that they are putting at risk on our educational landscape.
Can I just reinforce that point, actually? Mm. I think that, as you say, I've written an article about this. I've asked some deliberately provocative questions at the end of it, actually, as to what the significance of this is and how the sector needs to start to respond to what is now not just individual cases, but a trend.
Mm.
And in terms of your point about reaching out and sharing knowledge and sharing information, I'd like to finish just with a quote from one of my sources at the University of Worcester, who said of this process that they've now gone through and has changed beyond all recognition to what they were expecting and what they thought they were dealing with.
Yeah.
The source said, "We deliberately didn't disclose at the start as we thought we were in a serious, honest discussion with senior management. So much for that."
So much for that. Thank you guys for watching. Please do share this conversation and add to this conversation. As I say, the louder these conversations are, the better. And until next time, do take care. Bye-bye.
This podcast episode has been produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network in collaboration with ArchaeoSoup Productions. Find out more podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.